You are about to partake in a Dead Bug podcast. And this podcast isn't for the faint of heart. And it certainly isn't for children. So if you are ready to proceed, I would ask of you one thing. That is to dim the lights, shut the fuck up, smoke 'em if you got 'em, and enjoy. Derby is in Derbyshire, in the Midlands, which is in the UK, or England. That's not the kind of place that announces itself. It don't glow at night. It doesn't seduce you or make you want to be there. Pretty safe to say that Derby is just concrete. Repetition. Rows and rows of ugly terraced houses that looked like they needed to be built quickly. And they were never meant to be loved. Type of place you drive through it and don't realize it until someone tells you later. Cigarette stains on all the white houses that ceased to be white a long time ago. Or maybe it's pollution. Or maybe it's both. With short streets, narrow pavements, small back gardens that look more like sandboxes, where the grass is dead no matter what season. Occupied by stained mattresses, abandoned kids' toys, and rusted up swing sets. With fences that are falling apart, missing boards that seem too low for privacy. Just more, there is a boundary. The air, thick and heavy, with the smell of curry and body odor. It's a kind of town where nothing ever feels new. Nothing ever really leaves. Things just settle. Even its population. People couple up by the time they're 15, have a kid at 17, 18, and their life is set in stone. The tourist attraction is that it's got the UK's only computer museum. There should be a welcome sign on its borders, saying welcome to Derby. If you're born here, you're gonna die here. And that's Derby for you. It was 2010 in this godforsaken landscape. No one knows the exact day, the month, or the season, except for one person. Used to be two, but neither of them are squawking. But what we do know is that a woman ceased to exist. Not officially, not legally, just in reality. And that's the story that we'll be exploring on this episode of Tales of the Shadow People.
Tales that need to be told. Those of the young and those of the old.
It's old more tragic than that they were young.
Tales of merriment and tales of woe. Those of Limerick and those of show. For many which of whose participants may never know. But perhaps there are those whose tales should never be told. Those are the tales of the Shadow People.
Isabella Zablanca was 30 years old. She had dark hair, practical clothes. Nothing flashy. I guess it's safe to say she looked like a butch. Like a dude. And I don't think I'd be offending her by saying that. Because I'm guessing that that was the look she was going for. And how she liked to be seen. She looked like someone who worked for a living. Because she did. Isabella was a cleaner. Early mornings, late finishes, she worked hard. Cleaning up other people's messes. The kind of job that doesn't come home with stories. You just come home exhausted. She'd come to the UK from Poland in 2009. and she lived with her partner, Anna Podawarna. Anna was a few years older, stockier, I guess, if I were using kind words. Broad shoulders, short hair. She looked like a butch, too. I guess the technical term that they would be known as amongst their peers is dykes, or bull dykes. I myself wouldn't use such vernacular, but that's what they would be known as if they were on Grindr or whatnot. And she worked as a butcher, which is kind of apt, because if I were more cruelly inclined, I would say that she had a face like a butcher's dog chewing on a mouthful of wasps. But I certainly don't have an affinity for cruelty, so I'll leave the description at that. With a body that was wide and close to the ground, and fingers like sausages or a palm full of bananas. Working in cold rooms, blood on the floor, the smell of decaying flesh with sharp knives. People who knew her said she smelled like rotted meat. But she liked her job. I guess she liked working with dead things. The two had met in Poland about 5 years earlier, and I guess it's safe to say that they were in love. Isabella had a daughter, a young daughter, that she left in Poland with a family. No one knows the reasons why, and I guess no one asked. And who am I to judge? Because judging ain't my business. Why they settled in Derby, no one knows. I guess it was easy. They got off the plane in Birmingham, and it was there. They moved into one of the small, terrace, shitty little houses on Princess Street, where the front door opened straight onto the pavement. Narrow hallways, a kitchen at the back leading into a fenced garden. Nothing about the house suggested ambition. It suggested practicality. It was cheap, and cheap's what they needed. They didn't earn a lot doing what they did. The two blended in quickly. Even though people knew and joked that they were bush munches, scissor sisters and whatnot. But they didn't stand out despite that. They didn't cause any problems. They weren't loud. Neighbors would say about them what they say about anybody else. They kept to themselves. They seemed all right. They were polite enough. Never seemed to cop any attitude. And there were a lot of immigrants in the area, especially Polacks. They shopped locally at the Polish stores, hung their laundry in the backyard like anyone else, walked the same routes, lived on routine. Anna left early for work. Isabel cleaned whenever there was work to be had. Sometimes they were seen together, sometimes not. They were all pretty normal. There were no signs, no public drama, no screaming, no fights in the street. No police visits. From the outside, they looked stable. Isabel often talked about Poland and about family with the neighbors and about her daughter. The child, as mentioned, wasn't with her in England. She'd left her behind with relatives, which I guess you could judge if you were judgmental. But to her, she said it wasn't unusual. It was a plan, but it wasn't the ending. She hoped to one day get her back. Work first, get some money, then bring her daughter over. But perhaps maybe that was what she was telling herself, to ease the guilt, so she could sleep at night. Isabella believed that she was building something, a life that would make sense later. Anna didn't talk much more about the future. She just talked about work. Cutting up things, about being tired, about small, immediate things. She wasn't much of a talker, she was more of a grunter. She was definitely the male in the relationship, and what she lacked in personality she made up for in look. Well, maybe she had neither, but there must have been something good about her. There's no record if their relationship was accepted in Poland or amongst their family. But what we do know is that they shared their meals, they shared their bills, and they shared a bed. They shared a small life, small enough to fit inside one of those shitty Derby terrace houses. And if there were problems, they kept them inside the house. And if there were tensions, they never spilled out onto the street. I guess like the pig fat and the guts that spilled out on the table when Anna, with her butcher's cleaver, went to work. It was at some point in 2010 that the calls stopped from the UK and the return calls from Poland. Nothing dramatic, no final argument or goodbye. They just stopped. Isabella had no family in the UK, only back in Poland. That was where her daughter was. And relatives who expect to hear from her. At first, the silence, it didn't seem like something was wrong. It felt like life. People miss a week, then they miss two, phones get lost, numbers change, money runs out. Petty arguments with time turn into bigger arguments, I guess. Isabella had two younger sisters and an older brother, but they were never close. Her older brother suffered from depression and wasn't good on the phone anyway, and the sisters, they didn't approve of her lifestyle. And although her mother was close to her, she was Catholic and she didn't approve of the lifestyle either. And her father had left home when she was a teenager. And for anyone who ever had a family living overseas, you know how fragile communications can be with time zones and shift work, exhaustion. Especially when you're working jobs that don't leave much energy at the end of the day for petty conversations or trivial at best. It's easy to tell yourself that she's busy. She'll call. I'll call her later. She's just sorting things out, just busy. When someone moves abroad, distance, it kind of becomes part of the relationship. You don't see the daily changes. You don't see who they're becoming. You only hear what they choose to tell you. And sometimes, you don't hear anything at all. Sam, who worked at Lasso's Polish Deli Bakery and Grocery, the best in Derby, apparently, known for its wide assortment of canned meats. You know, it's hard to find a good canned meat nowadays, and I guess if you find a place who does them well, you stick to it. But I digress. According to Sam, who seemed well-connected within the Polish community, Anna and Isabella would come in there often, especially on Sundays. But Isabella, the friendlier of the two, had stopped coming in. And when you'd ask Anna where Isabella was, she weren't forthcoming. She usually just grunt. He'd stop short of saying that she were a man-hater, but let's just say she weren't the sociable type. On one Sunday, when he decided to push on the subject, Anna snapped back that Isabella had gone back home to her daughter in Poland, and she wouldn't be returning. And the way she said it, he knew not to push and not to ask again, and he figured maybe they'd just broken up and gone their separate ways. And it was the same thing with the neighbors. Anna had never been the one who spoke too much, and they knew her for more her grunts and keeping her head down, trying to avoid contact. Isabella had always been the social one. But a few of the neighbors became concerned because the flowers that she usually tended in the front garden had all died. Anna said the same thing. Her answer was quick and curt. She'd gone back home to Poland, where she had a daughter. And although it wasn't said by Anna, they figured they'd gone their separate ways because Anna started to bring a series of women back to the home. And when the summer air became thick and muggy and windows had to be open, they could hear the male-like grunts coming from the window that Anna once shared with Isabella. Anna was taking care of business. And I guess if her business were being a dyke, business were good. Because just down the road, a short walk away, was an establishment called Darby's Brewery Arms, a pub that held a diesel dyke club night on Fridays. And were known for creating a butch, femme-friendly, lesbian-focused space. I guess for women who wanted to get off. In case you couldn't tell, I was just reading that off of their website. I added the get-off part myself just for a little artistic embellishment. For a long time, silence works. It becomes normal. But silence isn't solid. It shifts when other people move through it. And in Derby, routine kept turning, and Anna kept working, cutting up our animal carcasses. The smell of flesh, the sound of her cleaver hitting bone. Something she admitted to her many lovers that she enjoyed. She got off on it. My Uncle George worked at a pickle factory, and he said the exact same thing. Outside of work, her life didn't stop. It expanded. Some would say it even picked up. People who knew Anna and ran with that crowd during these years would later describe her as a socially confident individual, which I personally find hard to believe looking at a picture, but like I said, I don't move with those crowds. She was known to be charismatic in a blunt sort of way, and if you didn't run with that crowd, it may be construed as rude. Once single again, Anna was the dyke about town and was in many relationships, some brief, some more involved. And I guess that one unusual when there's a breakup, people move on. In a testament to her temper and possibly her controlling ways, one neighbor reported hearing some crying outside of the house just after midnight, and when she looked out of her window, she saw in the front garden a woman who looked like to be a teenager going down on Anna. And then Anna pulling her up and smacking her and screaming that she just wasn't good enough. She said that she'd called the police, but the police told her it was Friday night and they had more important things in Derby to worry about than a lover's tiff. The neighbor thought of mentioning it to Anna, but admitted being frightened because she knew Anna had a temper. And being the fact that she was elderly and Anna had often run errands for her, she didn't want to start a bad relationship with a neighbor. But she did gossip with the other neighbors during the day when the sun was shining. And they did have questions. Not accusations, but just curiosity. What had happened to Isabella? When she left, was it messy? Was it sudden? Did she really get up and just leave everything behind? One of the neighbors said that she'd taken a parcel in for Anna, and when she knocked on her door later that night to give it to her, she noticed that a satchel that Isabella carried every day, along with a coat, was still hanging at the front door. If she'd moved back to Poland, did she leave so quickly she wouldn't even take a jacket or her carrying bag? Mrs. Cleverly, who lived four houses down and considered herself a bit of an amateur sleuth, she asked further questions. She knew Isabella had worked at the school as a cleaner, and Mrs. Cleverly's daughter had been a teacher's assistant there. And she asked them what happened to Isabella, and they said they don't know. She didn't even quit. She just stopped showing up. And she even left some of her belongings there, her cleaning stuff. And when they tried to call her to return it, there was nothing. Her mobile had been discontinued. And yeah, sure, they accepted that she might have gone home back to Poland, but it certainly wasn't in her character to leave without saying goodbye. In fact, one of the young teachers had said that Isabella had given her a plant on her birthday, a little cactus that she still had on her windowsill. She found it so sweet that a woman who obviously didn't make a lot of money would go out and buy her something for her birthday. And she was a bit hurt that Isabella had left and gone back to Poland without saying goodbye. In fact, upon further investigation, when they spoke to the headmistress, Isabella hadn't even collected her final paycheck. And now, 15 years had passed since anyone saw Anna. And the people, they stopped talking and they stopped wondering. She was gone. But there's a funny thing about time and time's passing, and the more people you let into your life, the greater the chance that one of them hears something that maybe they weren't meant to hear. A comment said casually, or maybe while you're fucking, or in drunken anger. Maybe someone asks you a question and your answer is just a little too rehearsed. And we certainly know by the neighbors' accounts that Anna had a lot of lovers, and at least by one neighbor's account, those relationships could be tumultuous, like boxes stacked in an unused room that all have the name Isabella written on them, and a moldy passport in the bathroom cabinet that has Isabella's name on it. How did Isabella get home to see her daughter without a passport? I guess teenage lovers can be nosy when you have to go to work and you leave them alone at home. It was in 2025 when Derby police received a call and they spoke to someone. We don't know the exact circumstances, but the police received information, not a vague suspicion or gossip, but information specific enough to justify paying a visit to 24 Princess Street and speaking to the bull dyke named Anna. And they told the bull dyke that they had information leading them to believe that her lover, Isabel Zablanka, wasn't in Poland. In fact, she was buried in the back garden. When they confronted Anna with this, her face was emotionless. Some may even say there was arrogance in her eyes as the fish and chip-eating piggies pushed their way through and headed down the thin, narrow corridor into the back garden. When they stepped outside, the garden was now covered with concrete. Anna told them that she got sick of the grass dying and collecting water, so she had it covered with concrete 10 years earlier. It was only an hour later that diggers arrived at the property on Princess Street and removed the fence and started smashing up that concrete. And then forensics went to work and started carefully digging up the dirt and sifting through it, while the bull dyke butcher stood in the kitchen watching. And it was less than 30 minutes as the soil was being removed that Anna's past resurfaced. Human remains. After forensic testing confirmed what silence had hidden since 2010, that Anna's lover, Isabella, she hadn't gone back to Poland. She had never started over. She had never left at all. And police arrested Anna Podawarna on suspicion of killing her lover and burying her in the backyard. Anna would later tell the police that, yeah, sure, she killed Isabella, but it was in self-defense. Apparently, Isabella was extremely jealous, and many women had wanted a piece of the butcher's meat, and this infuriated Isabella, and she'd often attack Anna. And according to the butcher, after one night of drinking and passionate lovemaking, Anna accidentally called Isabella by another name, and this threw Isabella off the rails, and she picked up the butcher's cleaver that had been left on the kitchen table and came at her. And the butcher went into reflex mode, and when Isabella had come at her with the cleaver, she took her down and started banging her head on the floor. And I guess things got carried away and she banged up maybe one or two times too many. And she realized she'd killed her. Believing that because she was a homosexual and the homophobia that surrounds it, she wouldn't be treated fairly if she came forward. So she used her butcher's skills and she cut up her lover and wept while she did it. And then she had the garden that once grew her lover's flowers concreted over to hide her secret. Prosecutors told the jury that the body had been dismembered and had required a considerable amount of force because of how difficult it would have been to cut through the bone and the spine. Isabella's legs were bound with electrical tape before burial, leaving the forensics to state that there was a potential that Anna had still been alive when her lover cut her up. Dismembered remains were placed in black plastic bin bags, or garbage bags. The bags were then buried in the garden of the house that the two lovers had shared. And after that, the concrete was laid over it. Only a week after she'd been put there, effectively sealing the parts in place for years. Witnesses described it as a filthy makeshift grave, fit more for roadkill than a human being that had family and a daughter and people who loved her. And speaking of the daughter, it was during the trial that information came out, which eventually led police to the backyard grave. It was her grown-up daughter who had contacted a Polish journalist in her country and told her that her mother had disappeared and cut off contact with all of her family, not even a goodbye. And it was unlike her mother, and the family had suspicions that it was her Bill Dyke lesbian lover. When the Polak journalist contacted Derbyshire police and told them what had happened and their suspicions, the police remembered years earlier getting a phone call from a distressed underage girl saying that she'd been in a relationship with a Bill Dyke butcher, and she told her that she killed someone and threatened the underage girl, telling her she weren't the type of person who liked to be pushed. But when they sobered the teen up, she refused to press charges or reveal any more information, so they couldn't go any further with it. But now, it all added up, and even the addresses matched. It was in May of 2025 that they'd been contacted by the Polish journalist. It was June 1st, 2025, that they found Isabella's remains and all of her possessions, stuffed in a suitcase and a couple of boxes in the linen closet. And amongst those possessions, they found a photograph of Isabella's daughter, and now an adult. They gave her that picture, kept by the bedside, by a mother that she'd never known, and that she thought had forgotten about her. But the farthest thing was from the truth. The Bill Dyke butcher was convicted at Derby Crown Court on February 10th, 2026, of the murder of her lover and prevent a lawful burial, thus perverting the course of justice, and was sentenced to a life imprisonment, a minimum of 21 years. As she stood head down and emotionless in the dark, listening to her fate. And as a casual observer and tax-paying citizen, I ain't ashamed to ask, of how was this punishment, sending the butch, bush, munch, and Bill Dyke to a place where there are plenty just like her, like sending a fat man to an all-you-can-eat buffet. But I guess at the end of it all, it don't matter. And this is just another tale from the Shadow People. Thank you. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and remember, the best way to support me is to spread the word, or spread the disease, as I like to say. And until next time, that bug says, no more. Hello, citizens. This is Dead Bug. Friend. Lover. Father. Father of many, actually. And some of them are from those godless third world countries. And I gotta support them all. Well, not the ones from the godless third world countries, because, you know, their cords can't touch me. But nevertheless, the other ones, I gotta divvy up some money sometimes. And you can help me. Sign up to my Patreon, where you get hundreds of my podcasts and three times as many of my films. And you won't be disappointed.
No siree, Bob.
And I'll also send you intimate photos when I'm drunk. So what are you waiting for? I'll see yous all over there. God bless each and every one of yous. Well, except for yous from those godless nations, which I won't mention. But your money is still good. Oh, and remember, with each 100th sign up, I'm going to buy one of my kids a pack of smokes and maybe even get them vaccinated. I thank you.